I'm particularly happy to be here since I lived here historically. I went to school in Boulder. I don't want to give you another option of a beautiful place to go, but thank you for being with us this afternoon. I want to talk to you about the Women's Health Welfare Program, which is an example of a Medicaid family planning waiver. I am going to report on, on our case study of the Arkansas waiver. I have no financial relationships to disclose. I do want to thank our stellar research team, Sarah Blake, who is here with us, Katja Galakshinova, and Lauren from Emory University, and then we also worked with Jenny Kinney from the Urban Institute. And putting this waiver evaluation in context of our clear national goals, which I'm sure you're aware of, is that we are continuing as we move forward towards now 2020 to have the goal of increasing the proportion of pregnancies that are intended, reducing the proportion of pregnancies that are really short interpartum intervals or within 18 months of a previous birth, and we continue to address our problem of teen pregnancy rates, which are higher than other countries. Also want to remind us of the government role in the financing and delivery of family planning services, beginning with our Title X program in 1970, of course critical to the public provision of family planning services, but it wasn't until 1972 that Medicaid actually was mandated to provide family planning services, even though it was started in 65, as we all know. It now pays 71% of all public family planning dollars. And yet, the categorical nature, at least historically, of Medicaid means that this program excludes a lot of poor women and men that need access to family planning services. And though we've expanded services to women when they become pregnant, Medicaid is still organized such that it moves those women off of Medicaid coverage and hence access to family planning within 60 days of delivery. So many states have done what Arkansas did, which is pass or use this family planning waiver option. And I want to report to you about those. These are Section 1115 waivers. And they help the state move beyond sort of these categorical barriers that are embedded in Medicaid. So what do? They help to fill this gap by expanding Medicaid coverage to family planning services to higher income groups of women and some states to men. Most of them are moving towards the 200% federal poverty level. By doing this, they're also greatly expanding access for childless adults or nulliparous women because these are the groups that, by Medicaid's categorical nature, are so often left out. They generally expand to these new groups the set of service, access to the set of services that Medicaid now covers as family planning, client counseling and education, wide range of contraceptives, drugs and supplies, and related diagnostic tests, such as testing for cervical cancer and so forth. As with any state policy, there's a lot of variation across the states as to how they implement their waiver. Some began to implement them just for women postpartum after they delivered on Medicaid. Other states began to expand to new income groups, higher income groups, and some states, I think nine now, have expanded to include men. A picture always helps us see what's going on, and as you can see, those that are basing their family planning waiver expansions on the basis of income really dominate now. Those light blue colored states, very light in this picture, are the ones, there's 21 of them, they have used an income-based expansion. There are still a handful that are expanding on the basis of postpartum, either a delivery or leaving Medicaid for any reason. The other thing, of course, you may not see it very well, but there's a swath of Midwestern states and a few Southeastern states which have not taken up this option of expanding access to family planning services. So what I want to do is give you our results from a waiver evaluation that was funded by Office of Population Affairs. As the states changed their organization and delivery of family planning services, we were interested in what happened to access to services, contraceptive preventive services, and unintended pregnancy in particular. We are looking at six case studies, and I'm reporting to you on the first one, Arkansas, although we're very close to finishing up our work in all of the remaining states. We used a mixed methods approach to looking at the Arkansas waiver. I'm going to talk to you about both the quantitative and qualitative components. In the quantitative side, we used secondary database, which I'll talk to you about in a minute, pre-post treatment and control groups, and we looked at a number of outcomes of interest. I'll focus on unintended pregnancy and contraceptive use postpartum today. In the qualitative section of our study, we stepped back and looked, tried to assess the history. Why did the state implement the waiver? And in doing so, we talked with personnel in Title X and Medicaid programs. We were also very interested in how the state went about designing and implementing its waiver. What did they do in terms of outreach? How do they enroll those who are eligible? What are the services that they are covering? And how did they get providers involved? We were very, very interested in what worked and what didn't, and we also were interested in what the enrollees thought of the waiver program as they used it. So what did Arkansas do? In September 1997, it used this waiver option to expand to women ages 14 to 44, and initially made it available to women who had incomes at or below 133% of federal poverty level, although you can see now, more currently, they've moved up to 200% of the federal poverty level. And interesting aspect of Arkansas and other states' waiver programs is that if the minor is living with their parents and they seek services, they are disregarding the parents' income. So in a sense, they are making these family planning services available to teens at almost any income level. In the next few slides, then talk to you about the qualitative data methods and results. We went about discerning some of the things we wanted to know just about the nature of the program by document review, looking at the application itself, manuals and outreach materials that the state had used. We did either in-person or phone interviews of both Medicaid and Title X personnel. We focused on the grantees, which in Arkansas are through the Department of Health, their public health clinics, and also talked to regional program consultants and providers. We also, as I said, completed focus groups with the clients themselves. Realize this was moving around. So what did we find? The state's motivation in terms of Arkansas was really with their concern with high teen pregnancy rates and with poor birth outcomes. They expanded to a new group rather than expanding the range of services beyond what they provided primarily through their traditional Medicaid program. They did little initial outreach to let women and providers know about the program, in part because of some political issues about the passage of the family planning waiver. But the outreach efforts did grow along with the program, and most of the clients have learned about it through word of mouth. They did a lot to make access easy. They're able to apply on-site at the clinics. The only thing that's required is a proof of citizenship. Income is self-reported. Even though it takes a while for Medicaid approval, they can receive services on the same day due to presumptive eligibility. And re-enrollment now is conducted on an annual basis, which has been a change, and we did find that that did create some barriers, some confusion and frustration over the years as the program has expanded. They, as other states, provide a wide range of contraceptives, counseling, and as I said, testing. One thing that we're seeing across the states is that sometimes the testing is provided for STT, but not the treatment. But as you can see, there is a wide range of services made newly available to these women. They do have to go to pharmacists if the clinics themselves do not have them. There is no copay required, so that provides ease of access. And we found that the participants are using the program not only for birth control, but for testing, pregnancy and other, and also for annual exams, so basic primary care. In Arkansas, the Department of Health clinics all participate. They provide 90% of the services to the waiver clients. There's very low private provider participation, which is an issue. The Medicaid providers could participate, but one of the things that we heard was they were concerned that if they found non-family planning needs of their clients, they were not reimbursed for those services, and they felt that they might not be able to provide referrals, and so that's been a part of the reason they weren't participating. And the program is organized and paid pretty much, the providers are paid pretty much as in the remainder of the Medicaid program. Now, with respect to the quantitative analysis, we used a data set called the Pregnancy Assessment Monitoring System. It randomly samples births in states that participate. You can only use it if the states achieve a 70% response rate, which is rather high. It does oversample high-risk births, which does provide you good samples for those women we're often interested in. And in terms of looking at unintended pregnancy, then, we were using the question that is asked in that survey, thinking back just before you got pregnant, how did you feel about becoming pregnant? And using of those four responses, unwanted as not wanting it then or in the future, and mistimed as wanting it later. This is a lot of information on this slide, but in terms of the methods here, just intuitively what we're doing, we gather data pre-post, we gather data on treatment and control groups, we controlled for a number of characteristics that we thought would affect the probability of the outcomes we were looking at, and the outcomes we were looking at were unintended pregnancy, postpartum birth control use, age at first birth, etc. And then we used a method that's used in a number of studies that we get involved in, a difference in difference estimator. And intuitively what it does is say, does the change pre and post the waiver differ for the treatment versus the control group? In other words, did the rate of change in unintended pregnancy look different for that treatment group than it did for the control group? And so who were our treatment groups? Primarily, we looked at all Medicaid women at delivery, nulliparous, or the childless adults, and teens. And we changed our pre and post periods for the different outcomes. So what did we anticipate an effect that we looked as we looked at the descriptive data? For all Medicaid adults, there were not differences between the Arkansas and control states. These states did not have a waiver. For the nulliparous adults in Arkansas versus the control states, we did see that unwanted pregnancy was going down while it was going up in the other states. And for teens, we saw that unwanted pregnancy was going down in Arkansas while going up in the control states, and postpartum birth control use was going up in Arkansas while going down in the other states. And so then quickly, after all of the machinations of the econometric methods, we pretty much found the same patterns, although a lot of insignificance statistically. We found that about a 5% drop in unwanted pregnancies for those childless adults that were previously childless adults, and teens, about an 8% drop in unwanted pregnancies amongst teens. Surprisingly, a high increase in those saying they wanted those births to be later, but that may be saying something about the effect of the waiver on sort of the anticipations about that teens have about their ability to plan their families. And encouraging then an 8% increase in postpartum birth control use amongst teens. So the qualitative results have shown that the Title X providers have more funds and are able to allow to expand. There's been a success in Arkansas due to good interagency relationship. Citizenship documentation has caused a big problem, especially starting in 2005, and the participants were generally very satisfied with the program. The quantitative results, not consistent as much as we would like. We said as they were largely amongst the teens and nulliparous women. And this postpartum birth control effect amongst teens may say that there's an effect of the waiver on repeat teen pregnancies that we're not really able to see. The effects do suggest budget neutrality, which is one thing that's required of these waivers, and as always, we may have statistical issues, as well as low take-up and use rates that may have affected our inability to see a lot of effects in this statistical analysis. One thing to note, too, is that there are very high rates of unintended birth remaining even after the waiver, especially amongst teens, unmarried, and women, and low with educational levels. So I won't go on. These have been fairly successful, or really successful, I should say, policies, the waivers. There's room for improvement. We think that Georgia may be the 28th state with the family planning waiver, and it may indeed have a unique part to it that will allow the state to follow women who have had a very low birth weight over the next 2 years and provide them interpregnancy care. Healthcare reform is also going to do a lot for expanding family planning services in general by making Medicaid available to individuals and families under 133%, regardless of those categories I talked about earlier. And a big, big, big change is that the states can now do these expansions of family planning services under a state plan amendment, which is much easier. There'll be other parts of healthcare reform that could also improve access, hopefully, as we go forward in that direction. So thank you for your attention, and I don't know if we want to take questions now, or?
I think we'll
okay.